Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Okay, so let's come back down to sort of some more, I guess, not exactly concrete because it's strategic stuff. I mean, one of the problems with strategy is like, as entrepreneurs, we want to see numbers coming out of it. We want to take an action and see a result. And of course, there's a bit of a gap right between those two sometimes. So I'll come to that in a second, actually, because there's a sort of mental problem there. Sounds a bit wrong. You know what I mean? So you were saying what really matters on the revenue side, conversion rate and traffic. What are the other metrics that you think really matters that we can afford to get obsessed with rather than micromanaging, say, only reviews and ignoring the fact that your images suck and that your text is bad? What are the pillar metrics, if you like?
For us, so conversion rate and traffic are the two big metrics. Underneath conversion rate are those four things that I mentioned: your price, your reviews, the images you have, and then the text and how you're explaining your product. Those are the four things that really matter for conversion rate from what we found. On the traffic side, there's two big funnels to traffic that we consider. One is organic traffic, so natural traffic that comes to your product. And the other is paid traffic that goes to your product. So the paid traffic, and then we actually have about four different things that break down each one of those. It's on the model, actually, the framework. The organic is all about how you set up your product in the back end. A lot of people don't do a lot of research into how they should be set up in the back end. I guess there's some, I mean, you see hackers coming in and like moving their product category just to get certain badges, which is, those are bad actors. Don't do that. Again, that's a very short-term tactic, right? It's like a tactic. Hey, this has worked. You do it, it works. Amazon restricts you, and then you got issues, right? But the back end, how you set up your product, the right category, and then all the keywords, doing all the keyword research of what are the best keywords for these products and how do I want that all displayed, that all contributes to what we call your SEO, your Amazon optimization, right? And that's all organic traffic. And essentially the way the algorithm works, let's just talk from a high level, it basically works on sales. If I'm selling socks and I look up socks, the number one seller on socks is the one who has the most sales right now on socks. That's really generally how it works. There's tons of speculation about all sorts of things. And I think there's some interesting things Amazon's doing, potentially adjust that based on region and even ship speed. But that's all kind of speculation right now. In general, you want the most sales possible, right? And that's going to optimize your organic results. So an organic is going to, that's the number of page views you're getting. Where your page views is a combination of both that and then your paid or all the page views you're getting from advertising. So then on the ad side, you have, you know, you have your the headline ads, your PPC, the sponsored product ads, the display page ads. Those are on Amazon. Then you also have Amazon DSP, which we may talk about at a different time. But all that paid advertising, and we actually even loop in stuff you're doing that's dumping traffic in from off of Amazon because you're going to be paying for it. But you consider, what are all the paid, how much is it, am I using, how much is it costing me to dump all this traffic into Amazon on my detail page? And that's going to be more traffic too. So that your traffic is a combination between the organic and the paid, and then that equals your total traffic number. And really, some of the art that we do a lot is balancing what your organic and your paid traffic is. And is, are we dumping in too much paid, or are we spending too much to dump in the paid? And hey, maybe our organic traffic's suffering a lot. Maybe we're doing way too much paid. And that means something's broken on our keywords or our backend or where we're positioned on that. You know, in general, we see between 60 to 80% of traffic should be coming from organic when across, you know, all the products, tens of thousands of products that we've looked at, or hundreds of thousands of products. You know, those are some of the some more nitty-gritty details inside of these two, but you know, I consider it as a structure, a hierarchy structure of conversion rate and traffic, and then underneath that, what's next that you pay attention to.
Yeah, it's interesting how talking to people who are very, very expert at this stuff. I spoke to Tommy Griffith, who used to do SEO. I'm interviewing for the podcast, so you can listen to it, folks, if you want a very, very good interview to listen to, because he's got an SEO mindset. So it's not just Google, although that is his specialism. He worked for Airbnb and PayPal as their SEO head of SEO, so seriously qualified. And he said, look, in a way, it's quite simple. And what you're saying is it also makes it sound simple. And just because everything that feeds those things may be very complex, that we shouldn't be losing track of the big picture stuff. And I guess this comes back to the question that I was playing out with earlier, which is, what the hell is strategy? I suppose, in a sense, strategy can sound like the sort of thing that somebody who's read a business book once just pops up on LinkedIn. I've been overdosing LinkedIn recently, and it can be full of some, you get pretty bored of people saying very generalized stuff about business, like, yeah, okay, great, but Where's the nitty gritty here? Where's the texture? Where's the hands on experience? Again, talking about Massim Nicholas Taleb and hands on. Sorry, talking about hands on. Just throwing my glass around here. If you're hearing interesting background, yeah. So in other words, how do we avoid the danger of strategy being so general that it's of no use to anyone because it could apply to any business ever? And also, how do we get that? How do we connect those bigger picture things and planning with the day-to-day execution side?
I think it's interesting how you're pointing it out. You know, strategy should not be so high level it can't be executed and tactical. What was interesting with our role at Amazon is we came in and we had to apply strategy and tactics to everything we were doing. So I would come in and create the strategy and then go through and build the metrics around it and actually tactically create what we were creating. So for example, the seller app, and maybe this will help answer some of your question. For the seller app, we looked at the strategy was I had to make a business case. Look, we can make X amount of more dollars by creating an app for businesses to use to run their business on Amazon. And the strategy in how we're going to create this app is we're going to create three essential functions I did all my research and analysis. People use mobile for three different things. They use it for location agnostic events. So something that's happened and I need to understand my location, right? They use it for an emergency quickly notifications, essentially as a phone or a text device. And then they use it when they're bored, right? When they're bored on the train or whatever. So of the things we created a scanning app on the mobile where you can go and scan a product, scan its UPC. It looks it up on Amazon and it shows you what the price is on Amazon. And then if you sold it on Amazon, what you would make on that product. So people can go down and use it as an arbitrage tool, go to Costco, scan a bunch of stuff, be like, well, if I sell on Amazon, I'll make $5 on this. So there's that one. And that's the location agnostic piece. There's the other one is urgent notifications or communication. And that's the buyer-seller messaging. And we created a whole portal to create buyer-seller messaging on the mobile app, which is not exposed into MWS APIs. And you can't get that anywhere else besides the mobile app. But the point there was we were trying to drive down the metric of buyer-seller message response time, because that's a big deal for Amazon and all the reports are there, right? And you want it less than 24 hours. And we actually found that people who are using the app, their average buyer-seller message response time went from, like, I think like 7 or 8 hours down to like 3. And so that was, you know, big success. And then the last one was, when you're bored, why are you going to use this app? Well, we're going to show you your sales, because everyone's going to be obsessed with their sales and they're going to keep swiping and finding their sales. That's why that dashboard, that homepage dashboard is there, because people on their phone are going to be bored. They're going to pull it out. And they're like, oh, what are my sales right now? And many people told me they kind of got addicted to that part.
I was just about to say, I blame you for my addiction on that. I remember, especially when I first launched, my God, like everyone does it. They're sitting there, swipe, you know, just looking at, see if anyone bought anything. And my God, you know.
I've done the same thing. I mean, but the strategy was, hey, we're going to make a bunch of money by putting in these three different features, because these three different features are what people use a cell phone device for. And technically, that's in negotiating around and whatever with the company, those are the key features I could get into the app. with the teams that were available and all that kind of stuff. But those are actually the three biggest that we called out based on the strategy. So, you know, strategy is a wrap up of, hey, what's my opportunity on the market? And then what's my differentiator with my products or whatever I'm giving to a consumer, and then going out and then technically making it happen. Then, you know, aside from my business case that I made, I then, once we made it, then we went into, okay, we're going to do all the designs of what the app should look like. We got to build the systems to generate all this stuff. That's all kind of the tactics into making the stuff happen. But the high level strategy was planned, it was set, and we went after it. And we went, and it was more than a nine-figure business within the first year of launch for Amazon.
So that's well, like over $100 million. Yeah, amazing. So I guess there's another question that comes up, which I think you just put out, the differentiation piece, that Vern Harnish in his amazing book, Scaling Up, which is another book I really, really, really like a lot. And it's been recommended to me by a couple of guys who are scaling up Amazon service-based businesses. One is Ash Monger, who has been on the show as well. Get great guests on the show. Very privileged to talk to them. And he's scaling up a business from nothing and in sourcing. And he's been talking about that. And what Vern Harnish says is that a lack of profits often is a sign of a poor strategy. And for him, he says, marketing strategy equals strategy as far as I'm concerned, which is quite the statement. I mean, not everyone's going to agree with that, but it's quite interesting. And differentiation is at the core of that. So in other words, if you're not profitable, the temptation is to go back to your suppliers and beat them up on price or go and make your listing look prettier. And of course, that's important. But prettier for whom and in what way, right? So I guess that comes down to differentiation. Like, what are your thoughts to that?
So that's interesting. I would probably say in a growth scenario, in a strictly a growth scenario, your marketing strategy might mean strategy. Then again, you know, just to push back on that idea, Amazon was built with almost no marketing. Bezos built the company based on a good business and a good model, and they did almost no marketing. His opinion of marketing was that it was silly and that they shouldn't even do it for years. People had to keep convincing him and pushing more and more to actually do commercials. I mean, those have only come out in the last several years. Like for 15 years of Amazon, they didn't do any of that stuff. And they grew to a monster giant without any marketing. It's because they built a service based on the needs of consumers, right? People need those three things. They wanted things faster, cheaper, and more of them. And they provided them there. And he started with books because no one could go to a bookstore and get a selection of 100,000 books. They would only have 10,000 books as a selection in the store. So he created Amazon, because it had all 100,000 and then a million and more, right? Is a selection idea. Perhaps in his world, for sure, of trying to consider that strategy is only the marketing strategy. And maybe, you know, this is not a fair debate because it's only one-sided right now. He's not here to defend. But the idea of...
He is somebody that I'm going to reach out to be fair. But you make a valid point there. I mean, Amazon itself, which is, weirdly enough, for all of us, a marketing machine, was built without much marketing spend it's crazy, right? And but I suppose that the common ground with that, I often find if there are two superficially opposing views, and there may be, and there's a good debate to be had. I like this. It's a great debate to have with your team and your senior team. But I think if you go to an even higher level, like, okay, understanding the consumer needs and having those are strategic drivers that go through everything like Brighton Rock, which is what we call in the UK, like, you know, the sticks of candy, I guess you call it. If you break it and it says Brighton Rock all the way through. So it goes through everything. I don't know if it's the thing for Americans. But it's, in other words, I guess that is maybe marketing is not the right word, if you think that means advertising and adverts and whatever.
No, marketing is bigger than advertising, for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you could say that, look at me defending Vern Harnish, I should get him on the show. But
I can see from that perspective, marketing is, it's market positioning and how you're differentiated, right?
Market positioning, yeah, maybe that's the, maybe different, yeah, right, okay, let's disagree on the word differentiation and positioning, which is always an interesting question. And I guess positioning is a metaphor from the world of physical, you know, armies moving around. And again, that strategy, in other words, strategic positioning is a big picture kind of thing from which you can be very flexible. But
I guess it would help to have a concrete example, wouldn't it? I mean, I suppose if Nike is positioned as the sort of everyman go-to moderately overpriced trainers, but they're not like really high-end, whereas Jimmy Choo is like seriously expensive shoes and they're not mass market, they're not aiming to be. I guess they're positioning themselves by that simple device of, are we going for brand premium products, premium pricing, that stuff.
And if you really get into if you get like super hardcore into the strategy, you actually look at the market, the full market, and see where the gaps are in the market with your product, right? Mm. You say,
yeah,
hey, is anyone selling rocks on Amazon, right? First of all, is there a market for rocks? And if there is anyone even doing it? I mean, you might think, hey, and if someone is selling rocks, are they selling premium rocks or are they selling cheap rocks, right? When you're thinking about products and consumer goods, you're thinking about this, you kind of look at, hey, are people getting what they need to get? I mean, the idea of mattresses and Purple Mattress and all the other mattresses that have exploded online, the idea was a mattress is huge. I have to go to a store, put it on my truck to get it in my home. All of a sudden, Purple comes in, boom, you can buy this online. It will show up in your door in 3 days or 2 days or whatever it is. All of a sudden, it's mattresses for the e-commerce world of the ease of e-commerce, which means people don't have to get all the goods from a physical store. And that exploded, right? That really blew up, particularly that with their advertising that they did. But that's one example of a market that no one was going after, and it was a huge market. So the strategy is, if you're getting really hardcore in the strategy, it's looking at a high level, what are these markets out there and what hasn't been penetrated? And if you're going to use Amazon as a channel or e-commerce as a channel, then you have to look at the benefits of e-commerce for the consumer and say, well, are there any products or services that are filling those niches and those needs for me? And if there aren't, and you found one, or you found one you can kind of convert into that market, then it might be a great thing for you, right? Think of all sorts of stuff like cars. I mean, eBay's killed it with cars. You can buy a car online, right? Like, that was a big deal when it first came out. It's because it's awesome. It's a new thing, and there's a market for it. So when you think about your product, you might say, hey, is anyone selling flagpoles on Amazon? No, why? Like, that's it, because the shipping is so hard. But maybe you could solve that, right? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess if people could solve the shipping of mattresses and make the economics of that work, that, you know, they're bulky as hell. I mean, they're really heavy. They're really awkward shape. They don't fit through doorways very quickly and easily. And so that, I'm sure you're right. It comes down to, if you're going to solve a big problem for somebody, you've got to be willing to go and sweat over the details of it, because that'll be excellence in execution, I guess, right? But at least the strategic positioning
from the strategic would be at least. Yeah, find the hole in the market.
Yeah.
Understand the market. Yeah. Find the holes and the gaps. Find something to fill it and then go after it. That's your strategy.
Yeah. And then it becomes an execution problem, and you can go to your chief operating officer, just have a small heart attack, and they go, oh my God, Mike, mattresses, are you serious? And then they go away and sweat over it, I guess. I'm sure that's how it works.
And they go and they say, wait, well, what if we roll them up really tight and we only use foam mattresses and whatever? Yeah, it's like, okay. Right.
That was occurring to me immediately. There you go. I was ahead of you. Yeah. So exactly. But that, I mean, I think that's a great place to wrap this episode up, which is coming back to this chess metaphor that you use, which I really like, I guess, because I like chess. So forgive me if you're listening and you don't. But I think that idea that instead of trying to see 10 moves ahead like a computer does, and that's how computers play, right? And this pure computational power, we acknowledge we're human and don't foresee the future. So we are going to position ourselves such that we see a gap and try and fill it, like dominate the center of the board, to use the analogy of chess, and then leave ourselves plenty of options for tactical little 2 and 3 move sort of combinations to take out the enemy. And I think that's interesting that in the end, we seem to come back around to some kind of consensus around the idea of positioning as driving strategy. So very interesting. And again, the word gaps in the market, a lot of the time I speak to, again, experts that they're really good at an area, the strategy is kind of simple. And I think the art is probably keeping it simple when you're buried in data, right? I mean, I think that's what Jeff Bezos has done an amazing job of.
And let me just end with one last point. We used to write lots of business papers inside of Amazon. And the number one rule was, you have to make this simple. It has to be written so like a fourth or fifth grader could understand this. And when you think about it, these are people trying to solve the most complicated issues. But if you really get a concept or or if you really understand what you're doing, you can distill it to something simple. And that's why Bezos has those three things. It's really simple to grasp and understand and actually go after. And some of the best business papers I've ever seen are like super simple. And you're like, wow, this guy's getting paid $1 million a year and he's writing something this simple. But it's because he's that good that he can write it that simple. And I realize a lot of my college professors are full of BS because they couldn't write anything simple.
Yeah.
But that was, at least at Amazon, I love that principle, is that if it's really good and you're really good at what you're doing, you can simplify it down and you can distill it down.
Absolutely. And I guess that's the thing, isn't it? If it's not simple, it's not probably a strategic objective. It's something different. Maybe it belongs in the execution inbox, like the chief operating officer sweating over, you know, or logistics person. But yeah, I like that a lot. And let's look at what actually works for the really super successful businesses. Amazon is crazy successful and has been consistently for a long time. And they have that rule. They have that culture. So let's just roll with it. Yeah. So Brad, thank you so much for revealing not only your approaches to strategy, but some great learnings from within the Amazon ecosystem when you're working there as well.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.